Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com.
Howdy, I am Steve Abramowitz, and this is the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. Welcome to our People in the News, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with a very special guest, Senator Janice Bowling. Senator Janice Bowling from Tullahoma, District 16. 16 is based in the rural areas to the west of Chattanooga, Coffee, DeKalb, Franklin, Grundy, Lincoln, and Warren counties. It borders the states of Georgia and Alabama. Population 198,679 people she represents. Her term ends in 2024. She is on the ballot in the Republican primary on August 1st, 2024. She's been there 12 years, 2012 to present. Her last election in 2020, she won 76-24 against the Democrat, 62,000 votes to under 20,000. She must be doing something right by District 16. She won her first one in 2012, 63-37. So they like her even more now, you could say. And 60% of the Republican primary, so they got what they expected when a Republican took over for a Democrat. Currently serves on as vice chairperson, Joint Commerce, Labor, Transportation, and Agriculture. Second vice chairperson, Government Operations Committee. Member, Energy, Agriculture, and Natural Resources Committee. Member, Transportation and Safety Committee. Member, Joint Judiciary and Government. She's married, three grown children, five grandchildren. A Baptist, BS in elementary education, special education from Auburn University, and former special education teacher in Lee County, Alabama. Hello, Senator. How are you today?
I'm tired. That sounds like a lot, Steve. I'm doing very well, and thank you very much for having me. And an update on that bio, I have seven grandchildren now, and I have a granddaughter-in-law.
So, congratulations,
the family is growing. The family is growing.
Wonderful, wonderful family, beautiful family. Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a long time coming, and I know the session is just coming to an end soon, but not yet. So you're still working hard. So your time is very valuable. We appreciate it. Like I said in your bio, you first ran in 2012. The Democrats ran Tennessee for a long time before that Republican red wave, let's call it. And to this day, we've got a supermajority in the House, Senate, and governor. The world calls us the reddest of red states, which is debatable with Nebraska, Montana, Florida, and Texas, but let's go with it. Did the many years of Democratic control, some say Dixiecrats control, motivate you for your first run back then?
Actually, Steve, up until the early 2000s, the Dixiecrats were pro-God, pro-gun, pro-states' rights, pro-small government, pro-fiscal responsibility, the ones that were from Tennessee. And then we started getting the Clintons of the world, and then the Obama. And that was our best recruiting tool, because that's when a lot of the Dixiecrats didn't become Republicans, they became independents, because grandma and grandpa was a Democrat, and they would roll over in the grave if they knew that their grandchild or child or whatever had become a Republican. And that is, Steve, why I made one of my commercials when I ran the first time in one of the largest cemeteries in Grundy County. I told them I heard they had a resurrection day on election day, and I wanted to make sure I'd ask for every vote. And so they saw the humor in that and the reality in that. And I carried Grundy County. And just a little bit to that, my first card, I did not put Republican on my card. I put Janice Bowling, how to get in touch with me, open it up, this is what I believe in. And then on the backside, some personal information and offices I'd held and responsibilities I'd had. And true story, in Grundy County, this older gentleman saw me and he knew I needed a phone. Excuse me. And he offered me his phone, and I used it, and then I gave it back to him. And I said, sir, I would appreciate the consideration of your vote. And I had it in my card. He looked all over the card, and he said, you a Democrat or a Republican? I said, well, I'm a Republican. What are you? He said, I'm a Democrat. I can't vote for you. And I said, I don't mind if Democrats vote for me if they believe in what I believe in. And he looked at me, and I said, read what I believe in. and tell me if that's what you believe. And he read it and he said, but you're a Republican. And I said, yeah, and I bet our grandpas could have been best friends. I said, because I bet your grandpa believed just like this. And he said, but you're a Republican. And he couldn't get over that. And I said, well, I've got to get on to my meeting right now. But before I leave, can I ask you one more question? And he said, what? I said, can a Democrat pray for a Republican? And he looked at me and he said, yeah. I said, wonderful. Then take my card. I want you to read it every day. I want you to pray for me every day. And if while you're praying, the Lord moves on you to vote for me, you better not quench the spirit. And he laughed. He said, lady, I'll tell you one thing. I ain't a voting again you. And he didn't, evidently, because I did carry Grundy County and all seven of the counties that first term that was before they redistricted. All seven were the counties, the six that surround Grundy County, and they all had blue courthouses. One courthouse had one or two people in it that were red, but every other courthouse was solid blue. And I went into that district that had kind of been redrawn to give to the Democrats. You know, we just want food with this one. But I had run for Congress years before, and that had been part of what I had run in. The people remembered me. The people liked me. And so the first time a Republican ever ran there, they got like 33-34% of the vote. I got that solid base, plus I got all the independent votes to have ended up with, what did you say, 63% of the vote.
That's right. Well, you should be president of the United States. All right. So so this show, since its Washington State beginning, had a theme of what is a Republican. It was the election year 2022 when we started. Washington is the bluest of blue states, with Oregon and California next door, and the party was non-existent. But there was a lot of candidates running as Republicans, and turnout was high that year. They all got wiped out, 100% of them actually, but sentiment was there for a change. Has Tennessee maintained its conservatism? You know, the eastern part voted for Barry Goldwater, or are you seeing a change either in culture or maybe voting patterns with all the new left UGs, I call them, coming from Washington and California, 80,000 last year alone, which is a record even for a 220-year-old state like this. How did your first know you were aligned with Republicanism?
In my county, in Tullahoma, I was an alderman. And back when we were, the senior Bush was running, Dan Quayle was running with him. Dan Quayle was the brother-in-law of a good friend who lived, was a neighbor of mine. So that's when all of us locally began to try to push that ticket. And sure enough, we carried Tennessee. And this was in 1994, though, that we were re-voting for them. But in 1994, if you know, it was a different proposition then with regard to the Bush-Quayle ticket. They didn't win again. However, what did happen, we were able to get people connected who were like-minded and pro-God, pro-country, pro-life, pro-small government, pro-states' rights, but also pro-constitutional rights, and so that we wanted to go back to, we hold these truths to be self-evident. And I'm glad that you always stress truth, because that is what we've got to run on and what we've got to promote. So that year, we did a grand sweep in Tennessee. We got a Republican governor, two Republican senators. We got five Republican congressmen. That was history. That was absolutely incredible.
And that was a bit of an uphill battle that, because that was a Clinton Gore. Gore is from Tennessee. His father was a senator.
I worked on the congressman that was working. I helped him as a volunteer, and we carried Gore's old district. And that made the difference. So Gore cost them that election, because had they won Tennessee, the rest would have been a different history when that came along. So anyway, all those different elections, they began, especially after the scamdemic. Does the past kind of blur to you a little bit? I say that sometimes I'm thinking, was that in 2019 or 2020 or 2021? It all just kind of became a blur. But that's when we began to realize that there was a desire in Tennessee to start getting Republicans to run for local office and for state office. And I ran for alderman, and I was an alderman, but that's nonpartisan. But one old crusty man came up to me and said, "Ms. Boland, I like the way you do business." And he shook my hand, and I didn't know it's a tradition in Tennessee to shake a hand and have a $50 bill wadded up in it. they didn't want a paper trail, and I didn't even know. I thought, oh, he's putting a piece of paper in my hand. You know, what is this? But that was the way the Democrats did business. And they saw that I was not that far from what their grandparents had been regarding pro-life, pro-God, pro-gun, pro-Constitution.
All right. Well, another senator who first won as a Republican the same year as you in 2012 has a primary opponent this August that talks more like you than the voting record of the incumbent. He actually has an F Liberty score on the Rhino Report and Tennessee Stands, and Liberty score is Heritage. He also won his first by landslide, 69-31, on some of the same committees as you. We're not going to say who his name is, but, 72-28 in 2020 for re-election, which is massive. Some polling I've seen show he has a chance of losing his primary. Maybe not. I'm not speculating. But do you think his district, 18, with 193,000 residents, maybe have changed enough to vote Democrat in November instead of maybe, unlike you, he didn't deliver what they thought he would 12 or even 2 years ago? Redistricting took away Mount Juliet area, but still Hendersonville, which is a Nashville suburb, Nashville being very blue area, obviously. Clear other end north of you near Kentucky border. Anyway, any thoughts on the change of the demographics for the voters in the near Nashville area that might affect this state senator who came in on the same wave you did?
Well, and I will say that my wave, I didn't come in on that wave so much. There were those the state party was really helping. I was not one of them. And so I kind of did it my way, as Frank Sinatra would say. And so we were having our own contained changeover from very, very blue to red, whereas some of the others, not so much. But what had happened now, the people that have come in to Tennessee, like yourself, so many of those people already knew they were Republican. They already realized that the Democrats had cost them their livelihoods, had cost them their homes. All the woke ideologies had made it where it was impossible to live in what had once been a safe neighborhood because crime was soaring and the cost of everything was soaring. So those people, I met a lot of those at an event that I was invited to speak at in Williamson County a couple of years ago. And those people recognized me when I got out of the car. And I said, "I'm sorry, I don't remember meeting you. Who are you?" And they said, "Oh, I watch you on television. I watch the committee meetings." And I thought, whoa, these people are hardcore if they're sitting there watching the committee meetings. And so they said, "We appreciate you. We left everything we own, three generations, four generations in California. And now we're in Tennessee, and we're not going to let y'all change. We're going to make sure that Tennessee stays red." Yes. So to answer your question, I think that a lot of the people coming in are more committed to the issues than the brand. And the brand happens to be right in Tennessee, which is Republican. And so, but they are going to vote Republican, but they're going to, in primaries, try to make sure they have a Republican that is a conservative Republican. And that's very basic with parental rights and parental choice, and big pharma is not real popular among the conservatives, and the things that we saw that went on during the scamdemic, a lot of that really has helped to stir people to realize we came close to losing our foundational God-given rights.
Yes.
And in fact, for a short time, we did lose them. So I think that to go around the world to answer you that, I think right now Tennessee is in a stronger position to elect Republicans, but they're looking for conservative Republicans.
Yeah, I think some of these folks are going to, especially the long-termers, are going to realize that the vetting process has changed dramatically with the influx of new people like myself who understand what an underdog Republican Party, not a complacent supermajority, is. But we'll talk about more of that in a second. I found it interesting that none of the folks up there with you in Nashville can actually be considered working class. I don't know if you saw that study, but it could explain their closeness with big business. Just being very general, not naming names, but I'm going to ask you about some of your bills. But do you think your peers and their misunderstanding of the needs of working folks may be to blame for some of their lack of attention to pocketbook issues? Like, I don't know, the grocery store tax is up there right now, and public schools, which we'll talk about more in a second.
No, I think that most of the fellows and ladies that are in there with me, I don't even really, I know some are lawyers, and I know some had business owners. I know some were pharmacists. I know about them. I don't even consider their financial status because by and large, the ones that are conservative are across the board conservative, and they are for those things that most of us won't. Now, they're not for a nanny state, and I am definitely not for a nanny state. So when you say, oh, take away the grocery tax, well, we don't have a state income tax, and that's a flat tax. And I like a flat tax because if you go and buy a filet, you're going to pay the same percentage of tax on that as the person who gets a pound of hamburger. So to me, a flat tax is a fair tax. And it is a consumption tax. And what we don't want to do is tax production. So, and we don't want to take away the very means of the public schools that we have. That's the largest expenditure we have on our budget is public education. And also right behind that is free health care, TIN care. So then everything else, whether it's TDEC, TDOT, the Department of Safety, the Department, all of those things have to be done on a, I don't know the numbers this year, so I'm going to apologize up front, but relatively speaking, on less than half of the budget, we have maybe a third of the budget to run the whole state versus those really large things with the Department of Education and TIN care.
Yeah. A survey was done, and the top five issues in order were election integrity, medical freedom, Second Amendment, religious liberty, and inflation. I'm personally surprised inflation was number five. On West Coast, it's worse and number one. But why do you think medical freedom and religious liberty concern so many Tennesseans today?
I think the scamdemic gave us that gift because those are foundational to our God-given liberties. And I think when we were told you have to show a passport to get in this place or you have to have this shot, that now people are finding out it was as bad as we were trying to tell people. It was never authorized. It was always an emergency use authorization, which is illegal under the Nuremberg Code to require someone to take an experimental medical thing without their full knowledge and full consent. And they were using the word vaccine. And it at best was a prophylactic, and it was never safe. So that kind of thing, people, that was frightening. I carried legislation during that time in 2021, actually, that made it illegal for the state or any subdivision of the state to mandate the shot. I wanted it to go into the businesses as well because people were losing their jobs because they were choosing their life, their health, over whether they could work. And the people were smarter than maybe those at the very top of that scale, which maybe didn't take the shot, but they were mandating it for everyone because Biden was saying you had to. And so when I carried that legislation and we got it passed in April of 2021, that was very significant because people, that gave some breathing room. And then I explained to people, just because Biden says you have to do something, he has no constitutional authority, don't think you've got to do it. People were just running scared. And if he said you had to do it, then they thought they had to do it. So once he really showed himself in front of Independence Hall that September, I think that boosted our cause even more because he was a Nazi. He was standing there looking like Hitler himself, and beating that podium with two armed guards standing to his side with the red light. It was frightening. It couldn't have been scripted any better to make people wake up that this is not who we want as in that presidency, and this man is a danger to himself and to us. So that was the pro-medical part of it. People want to make sure they're never put in that box again. And religion, I also carried legislation that year that would have said that regardless of what pandemic there might be or scamdemic or whatever, that we have our First Amendment rights and we have the right to worship, and churches cannot be closed for worship. Now, I didn't say you could have basketball games or potluck suppers or whatever, but worship had to be there. And that bill was sent to summer study. The chairman of that committee said, but I don't think that's fair. If you can say you can go to church, but if someone wants to go to a soccer game, they can't go. And I said, I would agree with you 100%, except for one little detail. There's no First Amendment constitutional right to go to church, to go to play a soccer game. There is a First Amendment constitutional right to go to church.
Yep. And I tell you, you know, a family of four watching you and those two legislations during that time is what brought us here. So you know, thank God for you and your televised version of doing that, because when we were looking, where in the world would we go? And we watched our rights being taken away one at a time in Washington State, where he kept his emergency powers for almost 1,000 days when no county had any COVID in it. And it also started there, by the way. We said, hey, Janice Bowling is onto something. And, you know, you guys allowed ivermectin to be sold. They were taking it away. You allowed schools to unmask a lot sooner, except for Williamson County, than other places. That's not your fault. So those two things that you just mentioned that are still on the concern of most people who have been here a long time and vote made Tennessee the magnet for us.
So this is frightening to me. You knew about that all the way in Washington State.
Because the opposite was happening, yeah.
My goodness. Well, and when we talk about the ivermectin, you know, the ivermectin is won the Nobel Prize for being the second most versatile medication off-label next to penicillin. And they were hiding that. It's one thing to misinform because you really are misinformed yourself. It's entirely something else when people were deceitful. And deceitful, you know what you're doing. And you're doing it intentionally. And that's what was happening during the scamdemic. And I pray that there will still be retribution.
Yes.
To those to whom retribution is due, because they disrupted not only our lives, but our very way that we live.
Amen.
They really tried to destroy. They tried to destroy the family. They tried to destroy the children. They tried to destroy the schools. But more importantly, they try to destroy even our ability to worship God.
And the Bill of Rights, one at a time.
The Bill of Rights.
So given that, why did the Senate just kill the bill that would bring transparency to the FBI working with local county sheriffs? They are the only constitutionally elected law enforcers that are supposed to protect us from government overreach. This is the opposite, especially in an era of weaponized agencies where we see FACE Act convictions for praying in abortion clinics in Tennessee, or worse, J6 prisoners 4 years later for misdemeanors, a recent death in Chester County of Ted Geschler, I think it's how it said. How do we justify killing that bill?
Steve, you're going to have to explain that bill better to me, because we are all carrying our own bills. We're in committees. We don't hear them as they come to the floor is when we really, unless we vetted it in committee.
So I'm pretty sure it was Todd Warner's bill. It was a bill that would have made the sheriff's deputies who were brought onto task force with the FBI report to their sheriff, versus what we do now, which is where if they are put onto a task force, they report directly to the FBI. They don't have to tell the sheriff anything, even though he's their boss and he's who we elect.
And that was killed?
In committee. Because
In House committee, where it's a voice vote.
Right.
So you don't know who voted how. Unless
it was unanimous on that one. Yeah. But
yeah.
If the Democrats voted yes, then it's probably not good. So the unanimous is not a good thing.
That's right. That is exactly correct. And that, but the sheriff asked Nevada, ask Arizona. The sheriff is the number one law enforcement in each county. and they can determine what's going on. Now, don't tell the DAs, because sometimes they like to think that about themselves, but the sheriff is the number one. And yes, his deputies should always report to him, not to anything else, anybody else. So I'm very sorry to hear that. I know Todd Warner, he's a good guy. And that is one thing we definitely don't want, is the federalization of our law enforcement. And so that comes close to being a violation of the Constitution anyway.
Yeah, the federal government took over the Seattle Police Department and put them under a consent decree. And then next thing you know, you've got defund the police. You've got courthouses being firebombed. Mm-hmm. So here's one of yours, SB 1094, killed in committee with no second, required the judges at a polling place to hand count and record the number of ballots counted and compare such number with the tally sheets after the polling place is closed. Makes sense. There it was right there, election integrity. Why did it not get a second, even to get a vote out of committee?
There have been many bills that I have brought forward that did not get, some did not even get a motion. One of my bills that would have prevented a violation of our Fourth Amendment. I think how important the Fourth Amendment is, search and seizure. You know, they cannot come into your home without a warrant saying what they're looking for and why. And so,
would have helped Ted Dreschler quite a bit the other day, right? That guy who just
Oh, yeah. And so with that bill, don't know what the motivation was. They wanted to say that really people had hyped up the fact that Tennessee has one of the most secure voting systems in the United States and so forth and so on. Well, then why not do this? Because I can remember the day, and it hasn't been that long ago, where votes were all counted on election day, and it was election day. They hadn't pre-counted all for several weeks of people early voting. After Trump lost, I immediately filed a bill for that next session that would have required paper ballots, watermarked, and sequentially numbered at each polling place. And I had a bill that would require as the hand count of those paper ballots. And I couldn't even get someone in the House to carry it. So it died for someone in the House carrying it. And everyone said, oh, but the election, he just lost. And I said, no, he really didn't. You could tell. I had been out running myself. And when you're out amongst the people in an area that had been Democratic, and those people had their barns painted Trump, I mean, they weren't just putting up signs. These people were excited about Trump, and they were out there working for Trump. So when you look at that, and then I received hate mail from all over the United States saying that I was trying to restore Jim Crow laws because we were trying to have accountability in the voting process. And if third world countries can count all their votes, or if we can go to certain other places where votes are counted, and I know they've been
How about
counted.
Every high school in America once a year?
Once a year.
How it's about not that? A hard thing. They
it's
made
not
it very
a hard
complicated.
Thing.
All right. So for the sake of time, I'm going to cruise along here a little bit. Those are good answers though. But we spend $1 billion a year on taxpayers in Tennessee on education and services for illegals in Tennessee. It should be zero, but it's not. A lot of bills were up this session that died or, again, were killed that would have removed some magnets that make illegals want to come here. And now the Biden administration says Tennessee is going to get more. You and I spoke at a rally on the Capitol steps in Nashville just last month about this very thing. Why did Republicans not act on stopping illegals getting money and coming to Tennessee when both our U.S. Senators, Hagerty and Blackburn, Republicans, consistently rail against it popularly?
Well, it's a federal requirement that you cannot not educate a child who is here illegally. Now, when did that happen? But it happened at the federal level. And of course, that money's tied to it. And I'm glad last year they looked at what it would be to refuse all federal dollars for our educational system. I personally think it would save us money, because a lot of what they give us, we have to spend as much or more in our dollars doing the looking at the regulatory oversight. So when they are giving us this money, then we've got to show them we complied with all of their little strings that were attached. There's already been Supreme Court rulings years ago that said that the federal government cannot use money to coerce or to require you to change your policies. But for whatever reason, people are afraid to test that. But that's a Supreme Court ruling already, that money cannot be used in a coercive fashion. And you can say Scalia, I think, had an excellent ruling on that years ago. He said, you can refuse to do anything they told you just because today is Wednesday and it's kind of cloudy outside. You don't even have to have it's because you don't want to. You don't want those strings attached. And you know those strings turn into ropes, turn into chains. They defeat everything that we're trying to accomplish when we allow those woke, horrible federal regulations. So to your question specifically, there are strings attached to the money that we get, and it says we can't turn away illegal children. But the other part of that, if you have the illegals who are being shipped into here right now, when a responsibility of the president is to secure the borders, then every state has become a border state, and we're going to have to secure our own borders, and we're going to have to make certain that that we don't have anything to be a magnet. Now, we just passed a legislation. It hasn't gone through both chambers yet, I don't think, and I hate to almost bring it up. However, what it would do is repeal something that was passed a couple of years ago that said that illegals could have licenses in the state of Tennessee to do their business. And that is being repealed. That was a bad bill, as is evidenced. You know, I didn't vote for it, and I certainly voted to repeal it now.
Yeah, they also didn't let the transportation fines double to prevent them from doing that too. So there's some kind of strange...
that was a strange dynamic. I agree with you, Steve, and I don't understand.
All right. So school ballot, and by the way, it's $571 million was for education. The other $300 and change, which is not insignificant, was for all the other things, healthcare, housing, whatever. So it's $1 billion that it costs per, and that's going to probably go up as time goes by because nothing was changed. School vouchers, that's the big whale of this session. The left says there are giveaways to the rich that already have their kids in private schools. Lee and Sexton say it's a helping hand up for all the kids in failing schools. What's your take on the state of Tennessee public schools? And do you think vouchers, if passed, will make it better or possibly worse?
Which bill are you talking about, Steve?
Well, that's a good point. There isn't actually anything to read, but they want to do it.
Well, that I don't do Nancy Pelosi in Tennessee. Thank you very much. I'm not going to pass it and then find out what's in it. Right now, in my district, the overwhelming sentiment is against it. My sentiment is against it, if we can ever see what it really says. But by the premise, I would go back to what President Reagan said. He opposed them. He said, if you can do a debit or you can do a credit, but once you do money, that money will come from that pot of education money with strings on it. And so he totally opposed vouchers. He totally opposed doing that because it would bring a corruption into the private schools. And my concern with what has been proposed, the different ones, different things, but I homeschooled our youngest child for 4 years when my husband was on the school board. But we knew that the public school was doing something that was totally antithetical to the developmental needs of young children. He was in elementary school. And so we made an appeal to the school board. We tried to get it taken away. They wouldn't. So we had to take care of our child. We took him out of the school, and I homeschooled him. And wonderful experience. And it doesn't cost a lot of money to homeschool. And had to have him tested to go back into public schools in eighth grade. He tested 12th grade, ninth month in every subject. And I said, does that mean he can skip high school? But of course it didn't. And but the point being, right now, I would like choice between public schools. If someone could go to a different public school, that's no transfer of any money. That's TESA is supposed to be where the dollar follows the scholar. So wherever that scholar goes, let that dollar go. And counterindicated on that, though, from what I've heard, is that in the bills, that the money actually is going to follow the student, the amount, but it's not going to be taken from the pot that is now public schools. So evidently, then every person that takes advantage of that, it would seem, is getting money that should have followed the scholar, but instead it will be new money, and the money that the scholar's getting is staying that was there in public education for them if they came out of public education. So you see the confusion there.
Not very workable. The easiest one would be just a deduction from your property taxes. But of course, not everybody owns a house. Some people rent, some people can't. But they do actually do that everywhere else. I pay for property taxes that have a huge school one, and I don't live in the house in Washington anymore. So maybe that's a solution, but who knows? There's not enough charter schools to go around anyway. So it's like you said, there's no bill. So what are we supposed to do? Okay. So even though Heritage.org said Tennessee was number one in election integrity, number one of a very bad grade for all 50 states, I should add, 68% of us want paper ballots on that survey, 78% eliminate voting machines, a 35 out of 100 for voter confidence in election security in Tennessee. That's not very good. Yeah. Well, so do you think they have it wrong, or does Tennessee have a problem leading up to November? Do you think Heritage.org has it wrong, or do you think we do have a problem because nothing's been fixed and here comes November really soon?
Evidently, Heritage.org has placed a very low bar. And so, as you say, if we're the best among the worst, you're still among the worst. And I haven't seen all those numbers, but to me, anytime my adult life is spent in Tullahoma, Tennessee. My husband was director of the multi-billion dollar contract that ran Arnold Engineering Development Complex, which is the free world's largest ground test facility for all of our major weapon systems. So there are a lot of smart folks there.
Wow.
And a friend of mine who has processes and whatever named after him, a friend said, when I was running for alderman in Tullahoma, he said, "Janice, the problem with elections is you can sit in the parking lot." Now, this was in the 90s. Think what can be done now. They can do it from China. He said you could sit in the parking lot and transpose the numbers all day long, because once you digitize the process, it's hackable. You don't have to be plugged into the internet. It's digitized within that machine. It's hackable. Now, that man was a PhD and I don't remember what kind of physics, but a very, very, very smart and very conservative person. And he said, our elections are not secure. I trust him, and I trust his integrity, and I trust his knowledge. Oftentimes when you go and talk to the people regarding elections, they take it personally. I'm not saying, I'm not accusing you. I'm accusing the method. It's the electronic machine that's the issue. Mm-hmm. And yes, if we had watermarked paper ballots sequentially numbered for each precinct, and I'm not a proponent of what I also wanted to do away with in my bill was early vote. You know, and I had young Republicans just furious with me. It's not convenient for me to have to go to the polls. I can do it when I'm running errands, or when I can do this, or I don't want to have to commit to a certain day. And I said, do you commit to your favorite football game? Do you commit to a movie you want to see? Do you commit to a trip you want to take? I said, the most important thing you do as a citizen is to vote. And the integrity of that vote is essential to even bother voting. And I said, so how could you not mark your calendar one day every 2 years that you're going to be going in November to vote on those federal and state elections? Like I said, I couldn't even get a House member to sponsor it. But even then I thought, we've had an election stolen right in front of us. Cause I went to bed that night cheering that Trump had won. And then all of the boxes and all of the numbers all just started appearing. They hadn't cheated enough with what they had programmed to cheat with, and they had to pull in more votes, in my opinion.
And early counting, early voting gave them the numbers that they had to shoot for. And I was on the West Coast 2 hours behind you, got to see the same thing. So even went to bed later, and it still woke up the next day saying, yeah, that's not cool. Back to that survey real
but
quick.
But it brought you to Tennessee.
It did, which is all for the greater good. Hear that, Steve? So I found this interesting. 90% in that survey support teachers should be allowed to carry a concealed weapon. Okay, regardless of that, this is the point. The left went nuts yesterday when the assembly voted that in. Obviously, 90% is a mandate, so of course they did. But here's the thing. Reps are a supermajority, so Dems are therefore super minority. They make all the noise but can't get anything done. The press in Tennessee loves them. So another institution that doesn't give the people what they really want here, as in conservative news. What do you make of the press in Tennessee and how they cover you?
Well, before I got home the other day, did you hear about my name is Olivia?
Yes.
Baby Olivia? Okay.
Yes.
That is science. It's medical fact. It's a computer-generated play on a baby in the womb. Now, it shows when the sperm and the egg unite, and that is when the new life begins, because that is a totally new DNA.
Science.
Everything, their sex has been determined, their hair color, their eyes, when they're going to be 60 years old, it's already programmed in that moment of conception.
Life.
And so that's 2 weeks ahead of the fact of they're trying to say the baby starts when you miss your first menstrual cycle. Well, no, the baby's 2 weeks old at that point, and incredible things are happening. And the baby has implanted in the womb, and all of that goes, and it's just an awesome thing for them to be able to see, because it is very scientific. And now a lot of younger siblings get to see, older siblings, I should say, get to see their preborn brother or sister in an ultrasound. You know, it's not uncommon for moms and families to go in and let the family see what the baby and meet the baby for the first time. So now when you look at what's going on with my meet Olivia, before I got home, Memphis, Knoxville, and I think Nashville as well already had blasting articles of what a horrible, stupid person I am. You know, they don't just attack what you do, they attack you personally. That I would dare bring such lies.
Gino Bolso is my assemblyman, and he was the co-sponsor of this, and they have been talking about him like he's a conspiracy nut just because that video is anti-science, which is the opposite. It's actually 100% science.
It's 100% science. It's 100% science. It's
compared to what they want in the textbooks with the pornography, the CRT, the this and that, which
they,
is
they want them
perversion.
To look at trash. They
perversion,
have trash,
yeah.
And they are pushing the trans, and up until a few years ago, 0.004%, I think, of the population could have a genetic aberration, and they would, the parent would have to make decisions. Those kinds of things are very, very, very infrequent in nature. But we live in a fallen universe, and there are times when things just don't do what they're supposed to do, but not to the point now. I think it's 4% instead of 0.004%. But in that film, which is beautiful, a couple of senators that didn't vote for it said, we don't think it's right for us to tell schools what to look at. Well, we didn't tell them they had to use My Name is Olivia. They had to use that or a similar ultrasound, but a scientifically, medically correct 3-minute film. It's in a class where parents have to give parental permission to be in the class. It's family life classes. So these are older children. These are middle school and high school and higher middle school. So there was absolutely nothing in that film that should have been objected to. But because it talks about God, it doesn't say God in the film, but it talks about creation. And it talks about that moment of conception and the genetic prototype of that child is there. That's when that person, unique in all the world. And I just wanted to say, wow, I hate to take it to you, but you started out just like that. Every one of us in this room was in somebody's womb, and it was a mama. It wasn't a daddy.
Until the test tubes, but yeah. I love it because you just made the left show their butts, because just like with Senator Hagerty's bill that said, you know, the census that's coming in 2030 is going to have to be citizens, every Republican said, yes, of course. Every Democrat in the Senate said, no, they run the Senate. It got killed in D.C., but it showed why would they say no to that? Because they want illegal headcount for their census in the future, that's just right. Like this. Why would they say, wait a minute, the same argument could be made about your pornographic stuff for fifth graders in the library, but yet flip it around a little bit on something they don't like conception, they go crazy. So abortion, anti-school choice, illegal immigration, all things the left loves to run on and raise money on. It's clear the Republicans have their number and do what they can as legally as they can to starve their donor base of the culture issues that the survey clearly shows Tennessee voters are against. Why does leadership in House and Senate, and even Lee and McNally, to some extent, even bother negotiating with them? They can't win numerically. The press will never give them credit. And folks like Jones and Pearson from the highest crime districts in the state, Memphis and Nashville, they just want attention, which they're getting. Why give it to them?
I concur with you. We've all raised children. And when your children pitches a fit, as we say down home, you just kind of say, well, bless your heart, and put them in timeout or spank their bottom or do whatever the issue calls for. But you deal with the misbehavior. And as an elected person who's in the Senate chamber or in the House chamber, if they have to just say, well, bless your heart, go sit down, they can do that. And not. You don't want to give them the attention that they want. Yesterday, it was terrible in the Senate chamber. And I think that the lieutenant governor was as patient as he could be, and he had to keep his word. He said, I will not allow an outburst. Well, they, of course, did that because they wanted to have pictures being dragged out of the chamber. These aren't acting like adults, and they're not acting with integrity, and they don't have any scientific thing. They do their childish chants. And it's kind of sad, but it's also disgusting because narcissism.
And Channel 5 loves to run with it.
Oh, they absolutely, all the media loves to run with that, with the baby Olivia. You know, they're still putting terrible things about Representative Bulso and me. And he brought that bill to me. So that was, I was carrying his bill. So then it's my bill in the Senate, his bill in the House. And I praise the Lord that they both passed. They both passed with great numbers, awesome. With great margins, and that is awesome. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, there's good Republican and there's bad Republican. We've talked about both of it a little bit, but that's definitely one of them. And this was obvious. What are your thoughts? 96% support a ban on medical procedures to transition minors. We had Riley Gaines on here and how girls lose slots to compete when physically superior boys take their medals. Vanderbilt got in trouble for doing these surgeries. What is your take on all this, and can it really be legislated out of existence? You know, most cultural stuff is important to legislate and usually works against Republicans, like a trap the left loves to set for them.
I had legislation with John Reagan on this 2 years before it was discovered what they were doing at Vanderbilt, before it became public. I knew they were doing something there because I knew that in my district, in a rural district, there had been children who had been taken to Vanderbilt and had double mastectomies. That's reprehensible. And when you disrupt how God made the child, it's not a few external appendages that are being changed, because the inside, every one of the millions and millions of cells in your body has a male DNA or a female DNA, and your body... Men's bodies and women's bodies react differently, different blood pressure issues, different heart issues, different all kinds of issues, because we're different. We're compatible. We make a whole, if you will. So when you have that situation, I had legislation that would not allow that to be taking place with children who had entered into puberty until they finished puberty, which could be 18 to 20 years old. And so technically at 18, you're an adult, But typically, you wouldn't start any of that at that late age. What they're doing is taking these children that they tell us don't have the brain maturity to be charged with crimes till they're 25 because the brain's not fully developed. But you're going to let a six-year-old say, Mom, I hate to break it to you, but I'm really a boy. Or, Mom, you thought I was a boy, but I'm really a girl. No, you're not, sweetheart. And you help them out. But you don't ignore the very basic truth when you look at a boy and look at a girl and the differences that are there. And so if they have been groomed, they've been given all sorts of things to kind of lead them in the wrong direction, because if you can destroy male and female, you can destroy the family, you can destroy our heritage, and you can destroy what God told us to do, be fruitful and multiply. You cannot, it's not an isolated thing. It's a very central thing to the destruction of our culture, which is based on a Judeo-Christian worldview with a husband, with a wife, with a family.
And that's that's communism right there. That's what you just described. We'd have less victims also if they paid attention to you a year ahead of time before Matt Walsh had to make a big thing about it. So session 2024 is almost done. I don't expect another emergency session. If you do, please tell us. But what was your greatest success and disappointment? You know, your nullification bill was another one that drew me here, because I'm like, if there's a senator in the United States of America that's for that, I want to be near that, which... It's been postponed again, which was my biggest disappointment. That is my favorite. What was your biggest success and biggest disappointment of this session?
That one was a huge disappointment because it's so foundational and fundamental. And if you go back and read the Federalist Papers, if you see what our founding fathers said, and Scalia, you know, and I don't know anyone that doesn't really respect his opinions. And when he says that and others, then why are we even discussing it? We just need to implement it. And all we did with our bill was to give five pathways to implement nullification, whether it was the people or the legislators or the governor or whatever, or the AG. But that was what it was to exercise what we already had. So that is a disappointment, but we are going to have a summer study, and it is going to be a real summer study. We're still working on when and where. We'll be here, but what time. The biggest thrill, I guess, I've had this year, I really think in a way it was the baby Olivia, because that did touch a lot of bases. It's science and it's medicine back in the classroom. It's understanding the reality of genetics and the reality of the progression of that child and it being a unique human person before you get to meet it outside the womb. All of those kinds of things. I think that was a really, really good bill. Did you watch my bills? Which one did you like?
Well, I absolutely was rooting for the nullification. I've had Brandon Lewis on here many times. I've been on his show. That we're all for that. Anything we can do to get that one over the hump, for sure. I think baby Olivia is great because it's not only is it science-based, but there's some politics there, right? You are checkmating the other side, because I've been very against the age inappropriate library books, and especially in the school. I do not want to see them put healthcare facilities inside these schools. I don't particularly know if the solution being proposed for the vouchers is the right way to go, but I like it better than nothing, because I think there's a lot of failing schools here, and the grades that finally came out, I think were probably overcounting success, probably a lot more A's and B's than there really should have been. Not enough F's. And so Tennessee does have an education issue. But, you know, for the most part, I think the session compared to last one that forced a gun grabbing one in the summer that ended up getting red flags anyway in regular session, which is what I had always said. Why have a summer session that wastes a lot of money? You could just do it in regular session. They did it. It's how it goes. You don't get everything you want anywhere, but I still believe that, you know, this Beacon poll that came out today, Trump plus 20 over Biden in Tennessee, sounds like Tennessee is still MAGA country. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that poll. I agree that it's MAGA country. I think that the polls, they're selling product. And the polls, when you get out there amongst the people and when you read between the lines, the poll is that Biden was never fully accepted as president, and he's proven why he wasn't. And it's not him, bless his heart. It's whoever's his handlers are. And they would exploit an elderly person who is not capable of rational thought at this point in his life for whatever reason. And they're still, it's almost a mockery to make, for them to act like he's the president and he's making any decisions, that he knows where he is on any given day. It's sad.
We're run by a Politburo, and you know, the 45 years of his legislative experience is also not that great either. I mean, the crime bill was probably the best thing he ever did, and he's run away from it completely. Okay, last question, and I'll let you go back to work. That same poll, Beacon, which I know polls are not scientific, they're actually pretty bad, but only 37% of Tennesseans consider them Taylor Swift fans. She's from Pennsylvania. I have to remind everybody all the time, folks, she's not from here. Are you a Swiftie?
Who is Taylor Swift?
That says it all. Fantastic. More of a Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton person, I bet.
For sure, Dolly Parton. She is a smart woman, and she has done a lot of things to promote what's good about Tennessee and to enjoy Tennessee. I love her Coat of Many Colors. It's a precious movie.
Very cool. All right. Well, Senator, thank you for your time. I'm so glad we finally got to do this. We are at the end here. So tell everyone where they can go to find out about you and contact you to support your legislations and your reelection.
Well, I can't talk about reelection. That would be illegal at this point.
Oh, didn't know that.
But I can say, yeah, that's okay. But Senator Janice Spolling at capital.tn.gov. So SEN.Janice, JANICE dot Bowling, just like an alley, at capital, CAPITOL.TN.GOV. And love to hear from folks and love to be part of whatever's going on, and appreciate the opportunity to share with people through your podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I look forward to working with you on some legislation upcoming. So enjoy summer.
I'll do it. Thank you very much.
Oh, yes. There we were talking Tennessee with somebody who actually makes things happen. Welcome to the Steve is a Steve segment of our show. Producer Steve, what did you think of our guest, Senator Janice Bowling? Washington State has nothing like her.
When she said scamdemic, I went, she's my person. We have yet to have anybody, politician, say that. She said it that I can remember. Maybe there was a couple others, but she said it, and I'm like, oh, she gets it 100%. That was the opening salvo. Yes, and it's interesting. She said in April of 2021, we visited Tennessee in July of 2021. We flew out, and even Washington was kind of lightening up for a little bit there. We flew out, arrived in North Carolina, and then did our Southeast trip. And it was like a different world. I mean, the whole Southeast was like a different world completely from Washington State. And I remember coming through, I was at Tennessee. Is it Vicksburg? It's kind of like an amusement town.
Vicksburg, Tennessee, yeah.
Yep. We came through, and I was videotaping it as we
were driving. Gallatin?
What's that?
Yeah. Gallatin, Tennessee?
Yeah. And we were driving through. We just came from a little moonshine stand that my son wanted to check out. And I was going, I can't believe it. Thousands of people. No one's wearing a mask. We're in a different world. And so it was like, and that was kind of like the whole
trip. State senator who I think is on the ropes, by the way, represents Gallatin. So that's interesting that you have eyes on that. All right, we're going to move on. So credit when due, discredit in this case. I harp on Democrats and Democrats' policies all the time when they prove to fail or are absolutely stupid and mostly wasteful of taxpayer money. When they're supposed to be the stewards of that money. So it's not my fault the left makes the news more often than the right, but when they do it too, I'll tell you, no golden calves or idol worship on this show. So there is this group called the Freedom Caucus. kind of remnants of the old Tea Party, Ross Perot voters, kind of Trumpian MAGA, but not really. Trump isn't even MAGA sometimes, but here we go. There are 41 of these men and women. That's out of 435 House members in D.C. For comparison, Rep. Jayapal, Omar, Tlaib, Bowman, Bush, what they call the Squad, AOC, or the Progressive Caucus, their name actually describes them perfectly. There are 99 of these freaks, more than double the Freedom Guys. Nearly 25% of the whole House of Representatives are progressive far-left squad members. Holy cow. But that's okay, right? We've got our freedom friends. Well, this headline, House Freedom Caucus members earmarked nearly $1 billion from taxpayers by Adam Andrewiski, Open the Books, Substack. Fiscal conservative earmarks dwarfed the $224 million from the squad. Recently, our auditors quantified the earmarks doled out by the eight members of the squad, an aggressive group of Democratic socialists who earmarked $224 million on 215 pet projects since 2023. This year, it was $13.9 million for the average squad member and $111.4 million in total. In 2024, the individual hauls for the 22 Freedom Caucus members dwarfed those of the squad. These quote-unquote freedom fighters earmarked an average of, get this, $23.1 million each for a grand total of $508.5 million. Those Freedom Caucus earmarks cost taxpayers $4.6 million each, more than double the member average for the rest of Congress. With every dime borrowed against our $34 trillion national debt, this is a moral outrage. Here is just a sample of the projects funded by members of the House Freedom Caucus. $190,000 to test electric and magnetic shark repellent, Rep. Greg Stubno from Florida, or Stobe. $50,000 for an elevator at the birthplace of Country Music Museum. Recently, Republicans banned earmarks into museums. However, this one snuck through, Rep. Morgan Griffin, Virginia. $505,000 for equipment at Roanoke College includes a synthetic cadaver, a fake corpse, for medical students. Can't they buy their own cadavers?
Can't they buy their own?
Rep. Morgan Griffin again, Virginia. $1.75 million for the Rural Mental Health Coalition at Texas A&M, a totally local project to brainstorm mental health solutions. No actual mental health care is funded. Rep. Keith Self, Texas. $2.5 million for a coastal conservation hub where Floridans can find answers to their coastal restoration questions. I have none. Rep. Bill Posey, Florida. $5 million for a Naples, Florida sewer to septic project phase two. Phase one was funded locally. Governor DeSantis vetoed $1.1 million in state money earmarked for phase two. Now phase two is funded by federal taxpayers, you and me, for $5 million. Thanks to Rep. Byron Donalds from Florida, vice presidential pick candidate potentially, $20 million for an upgrade of Baltimore Avenue in Ocean City, Maryland. Construction began with a $20 million estimated cost, but was delayed because new estimates showed an actual cost of $40 million. So Andy Harris from Maryland earmarked the $20 million difference. You're paying for it. Two members earmarked money for universities. Rep. Clay Higgins, Louisiana, earmarked $3.3 million to his alma mater, Louisiana State, for their STEAM Innovation Center, Science, Technology, Engineering, Agriculture, and Math. LSU has over $1 billion in their endowment. Maybe they'll name the building after him.
Oh.
Rep. Ronnie Jackson from Texas secured $2.1 million for the West Texas A&M University Foundation for an education training facility. The congressman's son is a sophomore there. How nice. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers earmarked. Certain members of the Freedom Caucus argue that the federal bureaucracy is dysfunctional, so they need to handpick hundreds of millions of dollars into worthy earmarked projects located in their own districts. 40% of the overall earmarked dollars from caucus members went into infrastructure projects at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, mostly in Texas and Louisiana. $397.3 million on 12 earmarks.
Oh, God.
Voting no, but 22 took the dough. Caucus leadership opposed both of this year's omnibus bills, urging lawmakers to vote no because the legislation was loaded with hundreds of pages of earmarks, many of which came from their own members. The 22 caucus members earmarked a stunning $510 million in the 2024 bills. Last year, only eight members earmarked $448 million. Rapidly, more and more of the rank and file members of the Freedom Caucus we're talking about are embracing pork barrel spending through earmarks. Now, okay, I ragged on the Republicans. And I'm a bipartisan equal opportunity destroyer when I see something bad. But let's remember the queen of it all. Clip number one.
From folks on Capitol Hill.
Well, there seems to be a divide, Chris, amongst the recognition of Israel specifically versus their current leadership. A lot of Democrats, particularly on the more progressive side, are not big fans of Benjamin Netanyahu, the current prime minister. And you saw in Jayapal's response or somewhat of a retraction to the statement that she wasn't talking about Israel specifically, but more about the current regime and the way that they're going about conducting business, particularly as it relates to the treatment of the Palestinian people. But, you know, the Jewish members of the Democratic caucus want to make it clear that they don't think even that type of language is acceptable. We've obtained a draft letter from several of these Democratic members that specifically talk about the comments that Jayapal made, saying that they're deeply concerned about her unacceptable comments about her historic Democratic ally, Israel, and we appreciate her retraction. They go on to say that we will never allow anti-Zionist voices that embolden anti-Semitism to hijack the Democratic Party and this country. But to Jake's point earlier, Chris, this is a divide within the Democratic Party, one that Republicans clearly enjoy exposing, and it comes at a time where Israel is going to be in the spotlight with the president's remarks here later this week.
Steve.
There you go.
I just have to butt in. Can I accuse my leadership or any other country's leadership of things I don't agree with? I thought we had free will.
But you can vote for or against her. She's in your district, but I digress. There you go. So she's the leader of 99 House members that all think like her and Omar and Tlaib. Those Freedom Caucus folks better start acting like Republicans and less like Democrats, or they'll be replaced in November with more like those women and less like y'all, my listeners. Kevin McCarthy of California, California Kev, I call him, for years, had this to say about exactly this. Clip two.
Two questions here. Let's take the first one, Jayapal's comments. This isn't the first person in the Democratic conference that has continued to make anti-Semitic comments. We've watched what they have continually to do. There are a number of them over there. I think if the Democrats want to believe that they do not have a conference that continues to make anti-Semitic remarks, they need to do something about it. Because they've defended these individuals time and again. The only time action has ever been taken is when we had to take the action. I think this is a role for the leader, Hakim, to prove that, no, they're not anti-Semitic, and they cannot allow their members to continue to say what they have said in the past. I mean, think about what we're talking about. You just raised the one issue of what she called Israel on a week when we have the president of Israel, Mr. Herzog, coming to give a joint session on the 75th anniversary of the creation of Israel. The closest ally. Within minutes of Israel becoming a country, America recognized them. But now we have leaders in the Democratic Party. She's not just elected as a Democrat in their conference. She is a leader of their caucuses. And she's making these comments. But think of before what also Congresswoman Omar said. She equated the U.S. military and Israel security forces with Hamas and the Taliban. She said support for Israel is all about the Benjamins. Supporters of Israel have an allegiance to a foreign country. Tlaib, what did she say inside their conference? That she had a calming feeling when discussing the Holocaust. Who in their right mind could even say that? Betty McCollum introduced a resolution to condemn Israel and support Palestinian terrorist organizations. These are just multiple Democrats on multiple times consistently saying anti-Semitic remarks, and it has got to stop.
All right. Stay tuned for my last quotes of the week. All right, thank you, George Strait, for my theme song. Time for my quotes for the day. Before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to heartlandjournal.com, Just go there and give us your email and zip code, and we'll deliver news right to your inbox for free. How cool is that? I really hope you like it. We work hard on it. And you can join the conversation at Heartland Journal on Twitter and Facebook anytime. I fear that no matter how well-intentioned this extraordinary session may be, it was ill-conceived. For reasons stated herein, I make a motion to adjourn. That was Senator Janice Bowling during the special session this summer in Tennessee. There are bills filed now that we must consider in a very abbreviated amount of time. Some of these bills seek to aggregate the rights of Tennesseans, and some of them seek to even enlarge the use of federal Medicaid spending, thereby expanding our entanglements with the federal government. Senator Janice Bowling, we must protect the children from the irreversible mutilations of their bodies and lives. Our work and vigilance must be ongoing. Upon passage of her bill, SB 675, Bowling said to her colleagues that voted in favor, "Thank you in advance for your continued involvement in making this mutilation of our children a short period of darkness in our state's history." And lastly, I serve a very rural and very mountainous region, and in the mountains they say, when there's a problem, there's a solution. If there's no solution, there's no problem. I think we all have to concur, it's an undeniable fact that our federal government has grown well beyond its specifically enumerated powers. The ever-increasing scope and size of the government not only violates the original intent of our founders, but also threatens to suffocate our liberty through draconian overreach, antithetical to principles of federalism. Today, we face a federal government that has taken literally hundreds of thousands of steps beyond the boundaries drawn by the Constitution. In Tennessee, we're taking corrective action in the past by making certain that we would never enforce any Bill of Rights things regarding our Second Amendment should the federal government enact them, and that was a very appropriate and necessary step. Amen, sister. That's it for this episode. Thank you, Janice Bowling, for making Tennessee, Tennessee, and conserving those Jeffersonian, Jacksonian values that made it, the 16th state, the greatest to begin with 228 years and 113 assemblies ago. This is goodbye for now. I'm your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of heartlandjournal.com. See y'all next week for new, interesting guests making a positive change in our nation today. Peace in our time, and definitely glory to God. Yeah, I've been dreaming of the
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.